I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are you serious?
Yes, this is How to Kill an Hour. My name is Marcus Brunzi. Thank you in advance for killing some time with us today. Hey. We got a friend back in the house.
Yeah.
Fung Butcher, what's going on, brother?
I'm all right, you know. I'm ready to go. Ready to go. I think that's the best way to phrase.
Oh, we got a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
Man. Before we get into it, can I just say on your social media the other day, absolutely love this, you know.
10 ayayad. 10 ayayad.
So it's that guy who was was a Canadian politician.
Yeah, yeah.
And he thought he'd be very creative and I guess explore diversity.
Yeah,
with the COVID restrictions,
yeah,
and he listed in the region of, I didn't count, but we're probably looking at about 30 different ways you could say
stay in your yard. Yeah, but yeah.
Interestingly enough, he even created a little space for Jamaican. I guess Jamaican Canadian nationals,
yeah,
to kind of identify with the call to stay at home.
Yeah, if you want to hear a politician trying to talk patois, this is it.
10 ayayad.
10 ayayad. look, just to give you context, I played a start of it though.
Hi folks, there's one thing that's uniting all of us in Ontario, and that is stay at home.
And this is regular
Restez
speaking voice.
Restez à la maison. That's yeah. French. Low fun.
A multitude of languages, but the best one was
Ten Ayayad.
That was the best one. Ten Ayayad. So yeah, there you go. Do you know what? There's been a lot of controversy on the internet. I don't know why, but I just want to say salute to Canada and their politicians for trying their best to communicate to everyone. Yeah. I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah.
I like that.
At least incorporate that here. Yeah. I think
Morris.
Yes, UK politicians could take a leaf out of Canada's book and try and explore the ways that they could engage better.
Yeah, man. 100%.
With this multicultural, diverse community 100%. That we're from, yeah.
Canada is leading in that. Leading
make
when it comes
notes,
to that.
Man.
Yeah, make some notes, you get me? Anyway, look, we've got so much to catch up on, Fight. You've been so active. We had a really important conversation last year around race, and it's nothing that we've been kind of scared of to talk about on the show, really. We've kind of had conversations about it throughout.
I think that's
the start of the show, basically.
That's actually the last time we had the show together. So that's
but the last time we had a proper show. Yeah, last time we had a proper show together where we could speak about it was obviously during the Black Lives Matter kind of peak, shall I say, even though it's something that shouldn't have peaked and kind of trough, but the peak of kind of conversation last year. But you went on afterwards. You said you had some things in the pipeline. One of the things you had in the pipeline was your collaboration with Mixmag, which is a big look. Let's just talk about it real quick, man.
Gosh, don't know where to start. And the thing about 2020, and even when we kind of get to a point where we have to explain the events of 2020 to our kids, yeah, it's going to be such
in a world.
Yeah, it's going to be such a blur.
Yeah,
such a blur. It's actually mentally, when you think about it, it's quite chaotic. Like the end game battle scene where there's just so much going on to the left, to the right. Yeah, so you don't even know where to begin. So we had this conversation, me, you, and Dev, and I think at that time we were kind of had Blackout Tuesday happened. I can't remember.
Blackout Tuesday had happened already. Yeah,
okay, so
Blackout
happened.
Tuesday was as far as I remember, because it's last year's is a bit blurry, isn't it?
Yeah,
because of lockdown. Yeah, I think that happened quite early. Yeah.
So the Blackout Tuesday event happened, and I think for anyone listening now, you have to understand that this was, that the impact in this was kind of widespread throughout all aspects of the black community, black entertainment industry, so on and so forth. So everyone kind of responded in their own specific ways as to their feelings towards what had happened in America with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and how that resonated with their own feelings of helplessness, disenfranchisement, and so on and so forth. So me being a kind of like a contributor in my own world in electronic music, I looked again, as I'd always done, at the issues, the things that were wrong with the environment that I worked in, and I kind of brought them up. And I really took a shot into the dark by putting it out there into the ether that the kind of conversation, the tweets, it would be really good if these could all be, elaborated on and fleshed out a little bit more and explored in a wider reaching publication such as Mixmag, which actually gets to those places in the music community that we want to reach and want to kind of affect and bring about better changes of circumstances for black professionals. So there were no guarantees. I took a shot and it hit the target. And you find yourself sometimes having to always be prepared for those moments just in case they do happen. And that's what I had to do. I had to be prepared to deliver on the expectations that I'd kind of put out into the atmosphere. There was a lot of energies banking on me getting this right. There was probably a lot of energies banking on me getting it wrong as well and making a complete arse of myself. But we move, we concentrate on the bigger picture, and I was able to pull together a pretty comprehensive overview of what had been missing in the electronic music scene and why. But I wanted to kind of navigate towards a solution-based approach. I didn't really want to just have, in the end, it was like 19 features. I didn't want to have like 19 features of just anger and frustration and ranting, and that in itself is a bit counterproductive. We're already kind of running on a deficit energy wise with the trauma of being locked in your house for, at that time, it was probably like 6 months of the year.
Yeah, man.
So,
and I find there's nothing wrong with grieving, I just want to say, but like, action has to be taken at some point. And I think your action was such a positive set of actions as well, man.
Yeah, I think I just tried to kind of mobilize people towards an objective which worked for all parties. Like I said, I spoke on this. I can't remember who I spoke to about this, but I basically said that within a solution, someone has to see themselves in that vision for them to engage with it. So I was very conscious of the fact that the solution that I was proposing is beneficial to everyone, even if you're not black.
Yeah,
you have to get on board with this. Kind of thing. It is what it is.
Harder for some than others, wasn't it? Twitter, we saw. Some people had to swallow their words or swallow their tweets.
Yeah, swallow their tweets. And the thing is, it's quite an interesting perspective to be in, because you get put in the firing line, you get the trolls, they're sending you racist abuse and all that kind of stuff. And it's not something that I would advise anyone to kind of go down if you are thinking of trying to make a change for the difference. It is quite mentally draining and taxing, and it's probably the worst year of all time to try and deal with it.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, we were able to kind of pull together, whether or not it's the pictures, whether it's not the interviews, all via Zoom, obviously, because we couldn't engage, and get these really, really difficult features out. We looked at techno music and its relationship and its the awareness of its roots. So we looked at that across the pond. We were talking to people like Kevin Saunders and Idris Elba. We were looking at Marsha Jefferson. We was looking at, closer to home, we was looking at black women that had been ostracized and admitted from even the business side of things. So that one was probably one of the most popular pieces. It really highlighted how much this has been a convention within electronic music, especially, but across the board. There was a lot of black women from other popular music genres, and they were just like, I identify with this as well. This has been my experience also. So it's, there was just, there was like a duality working where as I was presenting this information, it was confirmed by the experiences. So scientifically, there was a reaction happening online, which then you could push forward with and validate that there needs to be some change. So, I kind of presented a feature to kind of tie things off at the end called the exit strategy. Which is kind of like, in my way, again, you don't really have to be a kind of like a scientist or the most intellectual or articulate person in the industry. You just kind of just need to have an awareness of what you've seen and identify the gaps in the market space and fill those gaps with a relatable and credible idea. So that's what I did towards the end of the kind of the issue. And it was, I was a guest editor for Mixmag. Sorry to kind of come back full circle. So I was a guest editor. I've got no background in writing or journalism, so on and so forth. I mean, I've written a bit. I've written a few tweets. Yeah. I think that before that, I've pushed it as far as 140 characters. There was some smoke coming from my pen, or my keyboard rather, when I was doing that. But other than that, I've got no real experience apart from the lived experience of being a music professional in this field from all strata, coming from underground, real roots underground, pirate radio up to commercial radio. And I've seen enough of the nooks and the crannies of the different aspects of the industry to know that there is a problem here that needs to be solved. So I could articulate from that perspective. And credit to Seb and Patrick over at Mixmag, because on their side, for Mixmag to be really open, honest and transparent to look at themselves and look at the part that they've played in missing out and I guess adding to the issue, and but then wanting to change it proactively, I think that's incredible. And I think a lot of organizations, I think this is the important part, a lot of organizations need to be doing the same and matching their what would you call it, their gesture, that's what it is at the moment, their gesture of a black square last year, matching it with some real tangible action.
Yeah, and continuing action as well.
Yeah, continuing.
Blackout, Mixmag part two.
Well, this is the thing. So the beauty of it was, off the back of that, Mixmag have taken the blackout feature, they've created a whole tab on their website, so it exists there now, and more features in relation to that aspect of the black conversation can be added there. But also it's a kind of like a conduit of things that are brought up there can actually exist in the other parts of the magazine, as it were, kind of thing. So we're not going to be like compartmentalized to, oh, you just chuck the black people over there, kind of thing. We're going to exist all throughout the magazine, but issues of a deeper note, of a that are more nuanced, you can begin to explain in that tab. That's the tab. Click that tab.
Yeah, and if you haven't, click it. We'll put a link to it in the show description. Yeah. Click on it and check it out. So Funk, yeah, man, you did that, and you went and went above and beyond what anyone would expect.
And I've been releasing music.
But then something that tied in perfectly with it now, which is something that you released into the atmosphere and let us know that you were involved in, is PRS came knocking, like another agency that was one agency, another group, should we say, of people that really focus on the artists. So how did that come around? I feel like it was off the back of the energy that you were on last year.
Yeah, when you said release into the atmosphere, I was like, oh, what did you smell up past me? excuse me.
Yeah.
So that has come off the back of the, I guess, my consistency of character, and I've always been banging this drum. And if you're watching closely enough, I'm very passionate about help and change. And I mean, there's so many different fights going on at the moment. There's obviously the broken record kind of battle. Like I said, this is literally, it's 2020 was crazy, and 2021 is just 2020 part deux. Yeah, it's just the continuation, the director's cut.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's the
It's just the director's cut.
Terminator 2.
Yeah.
Judgment Day.
Yeah, Sarah Connor and all them lot. So it's a continuation of sorts. And so off the back of that, because I've been so vocal and advocating for change across the board, so there's obviously the change in, I guess, an equity kind of perspective in regards to the treatment of black professionals within the industry, that I've kind of been behind. But I've also been behind change in regards to the treatment of women and the abuse of women. There's talks of the change in regards to the inequity in streaming and the remuneration rather of songwriters, producers, music makers in general, as to what they get in there as a percentage of what's coming through the streaming sites. There's conversations there. So I guess all these different conversations that I've been a part of last year, they kind of coalesced into an idea that I would fit into certain spaces better than others. So I'll be frank, a job was kind of pushed my way and someone said to me that you might be good for this. And I was just like, I've kind of operated in a very DIY freelancer space for such a long time that I didn't really envision that there would be something in the market space that could utilize my skill set, which is quite varied. It's not as specific as, it's very hard to describe and articulate on paper what I do or what I've done. Cause I mean, you've known me for X amount of years and I wear many hats kind of thing. Even when I got a good trim, I'm still wearing. So the PRS Foundation, which is separate from PRS Music kind of thing, obviously they share the same name, but they're part of the UK music umbrella, which is obviously got underneath it. You've got BPI, PPL, Ivors. There's a whole kind of like, it's like the Marvel universe for musicians kind of thing. And the PRS Foundation, it is that space, that organization which connects with musicians probably more so than the others. Probably going to get into a bit of trouble for saying this, but from a customer facing perspective, musicians are engaging with us for especially kind of financial help if they're on a pathway, a trajectory, and they kind of need some assistance. Independent musicians as well, kind of thing, not signed acts, but to kind of fit into that situation, understand it better and see if I could be of help and of service. That it kind of really sat well, and it's weird. I haven't been anti-conventional 9-to-5. I would say I just haven't seen anything in the market space which fulfills me in the way this does.
Yeah,
and it kind of ties in with who I am as an individual. So, I mean, I've been in the job now for like, I think when this comes out, this would be about. Not when this comes out, but as I'm talking now, I've been here for like 4 weeks now, a month. It is a baptism of fire. Everyone's working remotely. And obviously taking into consideration, some people sadly have lost jobs and so on and so forth. So I'm very grateful, obviously, for the opportunity of like, it's just sod's law. The amount of times I've been looking and I've been like, oh, I'm done with music. Let me look for a job. And I've never found one.
Yeah.
And I managed to get a job during a pandemic. It's just like, okay, that's life, I suppose.
I think it fits, man. I think it fits in with kind of your, like you said, you know, you've got a very specific skill set and I think it works, man.
It's sound like nice. A hitman, isn't it?
Yeah.
Specific set of skills.
Dressed like a hitman today as well. Funk's wearing all black. He's got the Navy SEAL beanie on as well. You look like you're ready to.
Because.
Mission Impossible.
Because I'm dressed like this because, segue, we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about Hitman 3 later on, but I digress.
Yeah. But, Avi, look, we can get into it now, but like, I just want to say though, bro, like, I'm so happy. It's great that you're part of the PRS Foundation and that you're like, it's great now because I feel like you're always someone who's done things to be part of active change, and by being part of the foundation now you can actually be part of change, because I think for you it's a lot more than conversation, because there are some people that are very good at conversing around the matter and highlighting issues, which is needed. But then I think after conversation, there needs to be action, isn't it?
Yeah, man.
You've got action man.
Yeah. Action man, the greatest hero of them all. Those toys, those action figures, and they had like AstroTurf for hair. No.
AstroTurf for hair.
It's that weird felt material. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I think you have to be about action. I think now the time we're in, you've just got to, I guess in some instances, just be a bit fearless, risk it all and take a punt. Like, yeah, God loves a try and just give it a shot.
Bet on yourself. Yeah. Put me in funk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's Wesley Snipes saying in that film? Always bet on black.
Yes. Is that from Blade? I can't remember what that's from. Is that when he's Nino?
No, it's from Passenger 57.
Passenger 57, that's it.
Always bet on black.
You know, I would do a Wesley Snipes just night of films. He's been in some great ones, man. Yeah. Universal Soldier. Come on!
Shout out to Wesley Snipes as well. You know, sometimes this whole period,
he's been tweeting
last year as well. You really want to be infused by your heroes, and then it's nice to see that people like Wesley Snipes and a few other celebrities online. They hit that.
Yeah,
that
man.
Point, that moral compass, they right on the head. They get it right, man.
I feel like he's hitting us with some real knowledge, like wisdom now. Do you get me? We're not talking about the Wesley Snipes that duck taxes. We're talking about the Wesley Snipes that's learned for those lessons. And we're talking about the Wesley Snipes that is like, he's learned his lessons and now I feel like he's in a zen place.
Yeah, man.
I think he's ready to bring back Blade. I would love, oh, bruv.
I think that's going to happen.
Really? I've been hearing whispers. I don't know how really it is, bruv. I would love, because apparently he was hard to work with on the Blade films right now. And in hindsight, now you're like, oh, hard to work with.
Well, this is the thing. There's a new and greater understanding of hard to work with. She was a diva. Uh-huh. She was difficult. He was argumentative. Mm. And so there's a greater understanding of how damaging those terms and those labels are going forward and whatnot. So
100%, man. We need to add that swag back into Marvel, because, you know, he was responsible for a resurgence in Marvel and probably, you know, there might be some people disagree, probably helped to kickstart putting Marvel into where the conversation is now, because without any proof of movies doing well, because he had 3 Blade films. That's a good franchise, you know, to hit 3 films back then as well. Yeah. I know now you got Fast and the Furious Infinity, but whatever, like, you know, for hits. So that kind of would have put Marvel on the direction path it was now.
And the thing is, it's because also as well, because the Blade character is almost like it's a lesser known character of the Marvel universe. People didn't really attribute the kind of the claim that he did to the whole Marvel situation. So Marvel's kind of popping off and doing well, and they don't understand, maybe from a business perspective, his film doing well, it set them on that path.
Yeah,
because I've seen that.
Because like, we can do this with Blade.
Mm-hmm.
What if we took one of our like front running guys? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? What if you took an Iron Man or an X-Men or something like that?
That's
where the conversation would have started from.
Yeah, and to be fair, maybe that's why they were so fearless with the Black Panther situation.
Yeah.
Because they've already had a bankable success
with
a black man however many years before. So it's just
that would have helped to get it over the line.
Yeah.
I think it would have had to, for them to have the conversation. I know it sounds really ignorant of me, but like I know how ignorant these people are. They're like, oh, where's the proof?
Yeah.
Where's the proof? So someone would say, hey, look.
Hey, you seen Blade?
Got 3 of them. Oh, yeah, Blade. Okay.
My apologies.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's what you got to do, man.
They pick up the receipts. Oh, it actually banked well as well. Okay, yeah, let's do it.
That's why representation is so important at 100%. Times. Because representation with a positive outcome, it sets a precedent.
Yeah. 100%.
No one can question after that. It's just that facts.
So what, are we just, I would love a Blade 4.
Yeah.
Honestly.
They're not going to use him. They're going to use
bad motherfucker.
The guy from, I forgot his name. The black guy that was in, he was in, what's it called? The TV series of the president, and Kevin Spacey was in it. What's it called?
Oh, I didn't watch it. I was gonna say Sticks and Stones. It's something like that, isn't it?
It's a remake of a British.
Yeah. What's it called? Where he plays the guy that's trying to be president. I'll get it. It'll come to me. House of Cards.
House of Cards. Yeah.
House of Cards.
The black guy that is in that, and it's terrible. I forgot his name. Was it? Is Oscar nominated? Did he win an Oscar for Moonlight?
Yeah.
It's going to bug me. What's his name? Surname's Ali.
Mashallah.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Mashallah Ali.
He's actually got a little bit of a blade look to him.
He's got a blade swag to him.
He's got a blade look to him. And I've seen people do a few mock-ups and they use their Photoshop to do a little bit of cosplay on him. And
once they give him that terrible fade that Blade has, you know the fade, the trim that looks like he turned into a vampire halfway through a haircut. So that's his form. Man, I hope he does it justice, man. Because Wesley Snipes, 90s Wesley Snipes, hard act to follow.
He was everywhere, man.
Hard act to follow, man.
He was the bankable. He was like the black Jason Statham.
Oh yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%.
It was just everywhere. Anything action related. Don't worry about the script.
Brother, I swear to God, yeah, he was so him in a lot of his films. I swear he like looked at the script and was like, fuck this shit. Let me add some sauce to this script. Because he had so many one-liners, man.
Yeah.
See ya, and I wouldn't want to be ya. But anyway, so yeah, Hitman Free Funk. You're dressed like a hitman.
Yeah.
Like, for those who might be new to the whole franchise of Hitman, what's the general premise of the game? Because I feel like it's quite unique, man.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's actually prompted me to go back and watch the films again. So the films are out and all that and stuff, but the games are actually really, really, really enjoyable. And I'm playing Hitman 3. I previously played Hitman 2. And I don't know if I just had to kind of get used to the sensitivity of the AI. Do you know what it is about this game, yeah? When you're actually moving around within this universe of the Hitman, so you play this bald-headed hitman.
Agent 47.
He's a hitman. He's supposed to be inconspicuous, but he's got a barcode in the back of his head.
And the whitest bald head in the room. I feel like if a spotlight hits his head at the wrong angle, you'll be like, ah!
I'm not sure what that's on. Maybe if you scan it, it will tell you he's a killer. Like, I'm dangerous. I'm sorry, sir. Yeah.
Imagine putting his neck through the till at a self-service. Oh, damn.
I'm going to put you back.
Yeah.
You might kill me.
Customer service.
So it's the sensitivity of the AI I'm talking about is that there's been times where I've tried to grab someone. And normally in the game, you can just grab someone, subdue them and whatnot. When I grab someone, it's like, It's all gone pear-shaped.
Everybody sees you.
Everyone sees me, like, it starts shooting me, and it's like, okay. So this game is heavily, even more so than your Metal Gear Solid kind of games, is heavily concentrated on stealth.
Yeah. Stealth, subterfuge, playing badassery. I think what's cool about Hitman is kind of like Ronseal, does what it says on the tin. Yeah. You play a hitman, and you have to kill a target, right? Mm-hmm. But then they start to add this narrative into it, which, to be fair, you can pick up on if you go on YouTube, or they give you some recaps usually in the game and stuff. But to be fair, the main joy really seems to come from, like you said, Funk, you've got this world that's super intuitive, right? Yeah. You can affect it in so many different ways. But what's interesting about Hitman, isn't it? It's the fact that you can, the replayability of it, because like in real life, there are many things that are dangerous out there.
Yeah.
So if you have this skilled hitman like yourself walking around in the game, the ways that you can dispose of your targets is like not infinite, but there's just so many different ways which kind of lends yourself to play a different play style, right?
Yeah. And I think that in itself is one of the most encouraging aspects of the game. The fact that you actually go into it with this very linear approach of I'm just going to kill someone with my gun, because that's the way you kill people across games of all genre. You just move the most lethal weapon available to you. But then there's also this aspect of, do you need to kill this person? Do you need to kill this waiter that you only really need to subdue to kind of borrow his clothing and disguise yourself? Let me just carry him and put him in the closet here.
Put him in a laundry basket.
Put him in this chest of drawers and then carry on with my mission kind of thing.
I like the step away from reality a bit in the game is funny when you do dress up, because you get to dress up as other characters, and when people mistake you for other people, that's obviously, I know you're like, they're like, it's super suspicious if you drop a coin and somebody sees you, like, hey, what are you doing? But when you get to dress up as other characters, that is always being something that I always find like comedy value in it, because I feel like when they dress him up, he always looks a bit off key, doesn't he? Like, obviously you can see the barcode, but he just looks a bit like, oh, come on, man. You got to know. It's like me. If I put on a black beanie and a black tracksuit and you walked out the room and I walked in again, yeah, I'd definitely be able to tell the difference. Maybe not in certain boardrooms, but I definitely would be able to tell the difference. Yeah, so I feel like that's quite a funny take that they have on it, man.
Yeah. I mean, you can even arouse suspicion by hanging around for too long. So if you notice that when you're around, you bump into someone like in the party, I think the first level of the game, you're in that famous building in Dubai.
Burj Khalifa.
So you're in there and I think you're schmoozing in some sort of industry party. You've got to get closer to your targets. Mm-hmm. There's two of them. But when I was in the toilet and I got too close to someone, and I think I switched on the tap. Yeah. I let the water overrun and I've immediately aroused suspicion just because I've made a mistake. It's like, okay. So you really have to be focused and concentrated on being as normal as possible and blending in. It actually says that in the game, there's aspects where you can just blend in, where if you might take, I don't know, the disguise of like one of the kind of the agents in the game to blend in, you would assume his position, standing by a wall or something to look as inconspicuous as possible.
Yeah, like you have to, like, for example, to get into an area that's security clearance, you need to get the security clearance outfit. So you don't just need a key card. Yeah. You need to look like security.
Yeah.
And I think it's great, man.
I just love the distractions because you see when you can cause a diversion by switching on the Hoover and the noise will just...
Hey, what's going on over there? Yeah, I love that. Or throwing a coin And like, there are people that are speed running missions like 52 seconds. Yeah?
Really?
Yeah, and it's fun to watch. But at the same time, I was watching YouTube comments and some people were like, I took 40 minutes with this and I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Because you can, the way they've built it is if you go into a party and if you're really ignorant, you can just walk around the party and take it in like a real, if you're a real hitman, you don't just run in, punch up someone around. You case the joint, you work out where the vulnerabilities are, you look for the patterns, you see who walks around. And like, once you do that in a mission, you can, the replayability is so much fun because you can like go from poisoning people.
Yeah.
You can, like you said, straight up just, you know, shoot people, go rot them. Or there's like the more acne ways of getting rid of people, like making things break or making things fall on their head or whatever.
I actually killed one of the targets with dropping the chandelier.
Classic. It's acne, that, isn't it? That is. And then you've got to get out as well. That's sick as well. You can't just, when they're dead, it's not done. You've got to make your way out like an operative. And for me, if I'm honest, Funk, when they try and tie the narrative in, that's when I'm skipping. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, like, I look at it a bit, maybe like the cutscene at the start of the mission, but I don't really care about him. But it's nice to see that they've tried to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, what they've done with Hitman is they've not changed the game at all.
Yeah.
It's kind of like GTA, after GTA 3, it just looks better.
Mm-hmm.
AI is a bit smarter, add a bit more story in, but they've kept the premise that works. Yeah. Like, multiple ways to kill people. I was going to ask you what your favourite death was, but you already said chandelier. Mine's always like the poison, the rat poison in the drink.
I've never been able to kind of factor that into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always like, poison's hard because you've kind of got to.
How'd you time it? You got to find out what their dinner time is.
You got to find poison, you got to put it in the right place, and then you've kind of got to do it without looking conspicuous.
Yeah.
So I've always found that being quite fun. But yeah, there's loads, man. And I feel like I reckon they'll keep going with it, man. I think it's an easy job for them. You just got to make new levels, make new ways to kill people. Yeah. Like, you know, so I feel like even though me and you've been talking about it, violence, it's not the most violent game out there. It's almost silly.
Yeah.
It's almost comedy like. But yeah, so that's Hitman 3. So what are you giving that out of 5 then, Funk?
Do you know what? I really enjoyed it. So I'm going to give it 4.
4 garrots out of 5.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, speaking of gaming, Funk, I don't know how much COD you've been playing lately, but this is an influencer called Bobby Puff playing some COD, and he thinks that he got hacked. And this is him actually kicking off live on stream.
COD, fucking damn you, Activision! You greedy motherfuckers! I'm trying to make a fucking living here, and you fucking greedy corporate fucks can suck on my fucking 18-inch cock!
Ooh.
2 games in a row, I'm trying to make a fucking living here! 2 goddamn games in a row, dude! You greedy motherfucker, dude! Fuck you guys!
Do you sound a little bit upset there?
Yeah, just a tad.
Oh, God. So basically, Bobby Puff is a streamer And he's been experiencing what many people have experienced recently on COD, and that is because it's a PC game as well as platform, as well as a console, people have been hacking the PC version, like aiming and stuff. Just like different, applying different hacks to the game to and like auto aim, stuff like that. Auto aim's a big one because it means like somebody could be 1,000 meters away in the game and your gun just trains on them, headshots them, done. So sometimes, I'll be honest, sometimes when you play COD, yeah, for me it's like, if I get shot 10 times, one of those times is probably because of a mistake I made,
Easy.
And the other 9 times, I'm like, nah, that's rubbish, man. Like, I should have killed him, right? But there are some times when you play with other people, I've noticed like, oh wow, this guy's just got perfect aim. And hacking is an issue. It's always going to be, like, it's never going to go because people always find a new way to hack the game.
Yeah.
But what's fascinating is it's become this thing between streamers and even casual players where they're just talking about hacking, hacking, hacking. Mm. And what's funny is this gentleman was like, I'm trying to make a living here whilst dissing the game that he's playing. But it got me thinking, Funk, like, with regards to gaming and stuff, I mean, I don't see you as a rage quitter. Do you someone that stays on even if someone's giving you a pasting online?
Do you know what? Still coming out now. Yeah. So, when I'm playing pro, I really kind of get into this rhythm of, especially if I'm coming off the back of a defeat as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm playing, and I think the new pro is very, very, very intuitive. It's quite relatable to the actual movement of football. So maybe I'm banking too many expectations on what the game is supposed to be doing to kind of aid my progression.
Yeah.
But it isn't working. And I'm basing it off like previous versions of the game, innit? So when that's not happening to me, I'm like disconnecting at like 25 minutes.
Really? Yeah, 25 minutes. If it's like 2-0 and it's looking like it could be 3-0, Funk has left the game.
And the thing is, I actually just power down the whole PlayStation. I'm just like, you know what?
You flip the switch in your house, like, the fuse switch.
Yeah, the fuse box. I cut the wire. I go out to the main like exchange point outside.
Everyone's losing it. Everyone's losing power.
Yeah, I'm just like, I've had enough. No one's watching TV in the street.
Well, that's one kind of rage, like private rage. But this guy going off on Twitter, there's actual talk that people are saying that he might actually face consequences from Activision.
That happened with a FIFA gamer, I think as well. I remember before there was a FIFA gamer, he went off at FIFA and then FIFA penalised him, and then I think he's trying to transfer these Switch subscribers or whatever over to pro.
Really?
Yeah, so he kind of did it to weaponized his frustration as out of spite.
And I think that's what people that are in
petty
positions of power need to think about. Like, and you just, for me, it's like when I watch professional sports people, like this guy's claiming to be a professional esports player, if he's making a living out of it, or semi-pro, whatever. If you're making a living out of it, you're at least semi-pro, innit?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's semi-pro, right? Mm-hmm. If I lose a game in real life, even if I think the ref's been an absolute tosser, you can't, if you run up to the ref, even though English football's very lax, if you run up to the ref and were caught screaming in his face like that, like two hands screaming in his face, effing and jeffing, you're going to get carded and you're going to get sent off. And you might get disciplinary from the powers that be.
I mean, even you kind of point out that it's lax. I don't think it is these days. I think for dissent, blatant dissent like that, I think you're going to get a card,
You get carded and sent off. So like, what are the repercussions going to be for streamers that have potentially millions of followers shit talking a game that they've spent, you've developed and they've spent like a few years making money off your game?
Well,
isn't that quite ironic?
Yeah, I think there isn't much that can be done outside of the realm of Activision. I mean, it's not that Activision can turn around to all these other kind of game developers and say, let's all penalize him. I'll give him a slap. So they can't do that. So this is kind of the territory they find themselves in, where they've democratized their revenue stream.
Yeah.
They make revenue off the fact that their fans, who then turn into professional e-gamers, they make the developers the money because they're marketing the product for them through their content. So it's kind of, I don't know who needs more, who needs each other more. It's quite an interesting.
It's weird, isn't it? Yeah. It's like this ecosystem, like no game, no games, potentially no streamers. I know there are streamers that don't need games, but if you're purely just known for your game, you're not there.
Yeah.
No streamers. That's billions and literal billions, maybe even trillions of hits that your game's getting. Like there was a statistic, I put it on Twitter the other day, I'll find out what the image is, and I need to get my calculator out because it sounds so fantastic, this figure funk. Players have collectively spent more than 25 billion hours, 2.85 million years playing Call of Duty longer than the course of human existence. Like, something didn't ring right. I was like, hang on, but we've only existed. But yeah, apparently if you add up all of the hours, that's what they're at, bruv. It's a I didn't realize the power that streamers had over the titles now, and how it's kind of an ecosystem that needs to stay up.
Fascinating.
So yeah, they're saying that Bobby Puff, we don't know what's going to happen. He said in another clip that I won't play, Bobby Puff. he said in another rant that, you know, he's got a call with him scheduled due to his impact, but I don't know what that is. What's he going to say? Stop the hacks. And they're going to be like, all right, or no. Do you get me? Yeah. But you know what? It was nice hearing a man kick off like that. The part of me that likes the giggles when I see a young kid fall over, but when I know they're all right, I'm like, ha, that was hilarious. Enjoyed that too,
that was,
man.
That was just 2020 rage personified. Yeah, though,
exactly, yeah, exactly.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Maybach, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And speaking of some 2020 vibes out here, or 2021 vibes, Joe Biden's hacked the White House website, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, he's hacked the website. Well, he's put a little message in there, shall I say.
We've done it, Joe. So, We've done it.
Oh, you know what? I've not got to speak to anyone about this but you. His little run down the catwalk when he won. I was like, how? 80 plus?
Yeah, yeah.
You're moving like that? You're moving like my dad after he's had a couple of Guinness at Christmas and some music comes up.
Heard that Rocky music in his head, didn't it? But you see the talk online, everyone was just like, Joe! Like,
yeah, slow down. Yeah. Don't fall over. Yeah. But he's the 46th president of the United States. So the official White House website has gone live. I didn't know this until I read this article. Every time there's a new new person that's in power, they get a little revamp.
Okay. What are you using? WordPress?
Squarespace. Apparently, if you go to squarespace.com/Biden, you get 40% off. And a free American theme website. But it's gone live and it has a brand new design that even comes with dark mode. Okay. I see what you did, Biden. My brother. it's a fully responsive website. It's a good website, right?
Yeah.
But an Easter egg has been found already, right? Shortly after dropping the website, if you dig into the HTML somebody found online, it says, if you go into the back end and try and read the code of the site,
so it says, Joe knows coding, yeah?
Listen. Joe was around before coding. Joe was around before computers.
Wow. He actually was.
He's 80 something funk.
Yeah.
This guy is closer to the world wars, than most other people we know. Yeah. 80, that's the thing. People need to realize that old presidents and old people in power, as long as they got progressive minds, the wealth of knowledge that they have. Mm-hmm. You ever met somebody who's just older and you're like, I've only lived a quarter of your life or a third of your life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've benefited from a lot of people like that. They've got a great insight.
My favorite question to people that are older than me is, what would you tell me? What would you tell yourself when you're my age? I ask everyone that. Mm-hmm. Everyone that. And it's so funny. You see like the lessons that they've learned and they can install information on you. But speaking of installing, so he installed something at the back end. If you tuck in, it says, if you're reading this, we need to build the back end a bit better. So Biden's already came through. Kind of smart there, man.
Sick.
He is. I like it. I like little stuff like that, man. And yeah, that's a little interesting touch on the website. Engadget, who kind of reported this as well, they said it's no accident and it's part of Biden's 1.9 trillion COVID relief plan. And apparently there's 200 million out of that available for hiring personnel. And a big part of that, a big part of that team is making sure that you're tight on the website, man. Mm-hmm. You can't be having a dodgy old website. Yeah, from that onto robots for grandma funk. Yeah, so robots may be the new companion for older relatives in your family because lockdowns and global pandemics are leading, meaning that robots keeping older relatives, you know, company mm-hmm. in a time where social interaction is very limited is becoming more of a viable okay. thing. So I don't know if you remember iRobot, Will Smith's mum in it had a helper robot and there was like a woman with asthma and her robot was running with her purse to give her asthma. And Will Smith, with great prejudice, watched this robot running down the road and tackled him because he didn't like robots. Yeah, because they all look the same.
Yeah,
see the message there?
Yeah.
But yeah, so basically Vox is another website that I like to read a lot. Spoke to Mabel Le Rousy and their robot dog. And basically this dog was convinced it has a little bark, has a little waggly tail, its eyes open, its head turns and faces you when you talk to it. And the robot dog also has a synthetic fur and sensors that respond to touch and a heartbeat as well. Now, apparently this makes you much less lonely as an older person. And since March, since Le Ruzic got him, she said she enjoys watching TV with the dog, brushing him, tucking him into a makeshift bed, hugging him, cooing into his ear, saying that she loves him, and she's fully embraced a robot dog. So potentially, before 2019 or COVID-19, mm-hmm. having a pet robot was a ridiculous idea.
Yeah.
Now, post COVID-19, they're introducing these dogs into nursing homes to keep people, lonely people, company. So in New York, 1,000 seniors received robot pets through the Association of Aging. 375 people received them through the Florida Department. So there's 1,500 robot dogs out there with old people as we speak.
Wow.
I've just thrown this at you.
Mm-hmm.
What's your first take on it now that I've told you that they're using these to combat loneliness?
It's funny you mentioned Will Smith just now for having a distrust and a subconscious a prejudice. Not even subconscious, it seemed quite blatant and out there. But that has a lot of parallels with The Mandalorian. Because he didn't like robots. He didn't like bots.
He hates robots.
Yeah, he hated it. So
I dread.
So I'm thinking of maybe there is a level of distrust for all the issues and the kind of the gripes that we have with humans and human interaction and human behavior and the fallibility of it. Mm. We like that's just us as humans.
Yeah.
We're not happy with this, but yet it's like we can't be pleased. There's something else wrong.
Exactly.
And so
exactly.
We're unhappy with robots. But it's interesting because I think that comes from the way popular culture has in some ways demonized robots. Did like the not even the pitfalls, what you should be wary of in regards to things such as like the T-1000 and things like that. So what popular culture has done to robots is the same thing which popular culture has done to sharks with Jaws, where and spiders with arachnophobia and was it eight-legged freaks and those kind of those kind of cult films. So I don't know, but in some ways it's a great, I guess, interim solution to combat loneliness. I've read quite a few things online that to kind of combat against things like dementia and Alzheimer's and having some sort of constant stimuli.
Very important.
It's one of those things that you can help kind of stave off the onset of it.
Sudoku.
Yeah, like Sudoku that. As well. Lots of crosswords, puzzles. But I'm also thinking long term. You see me, I'm getting into my Kwame head again. Yeah, I'm thinking long term. So I'm thinking, so what if? Because a lot of people have been complaining about, oh, I'm learning from a dating perspective. What if to combat the fact that there's no quote unquote eligible partners, we start getting robo boyfriends and robo girlfriends?
Well, the body part the body part replicas exist. We've had the Booty Master 3000. That was a big hit. Yeah, that's a classic episode. Go back, listen to that. That was the pre PRS funk.
Yeah.
So
you gotta delete that.
I'll save that. I'll be like, funk, yeah, man. I need to be part of that PRS foundation. But you've got those separate body parts out there. So there's like sex toys and stuff people can buy.
And yeah, we can design AI.
Yeah, yeah.
Just so you can argue with him. Yeah. You can argue with this robot to your heart's content. Yeah.
Are you gonna leave that mug there? You're gonna leave that mug there. Okay, cool.
You can actually put a setting on your nag
level
for half an hour, an hour.
Yeah, the Nagbot 2000. But yeah, I think maybe the step, right? How about this for a feasible step? I think, right, so the technology is going there. We need to social distance, right?
Yeah.
We like to date online. What if everybody had their own tailored body that they could interact with sexually at home, but you still date the person, like their faces, like crude version, their faces on the screen.
Okay.
So like you have your, you know, perfect, your home robot. I have my home robot, and I like would swipe away on social media, or Tinder or whatever these kids do. Yeah. And that's your date. So, but you know, she'd be like, so, you could get rejected by your own robot. So do you want to, come to the living room for a coffee? Nah. That could be feasible though. Cause if we can't physically be around each other, then a little robot, I still think I, as a person, can tell the difference. Like, I don't think it would give me, if I hugged a robot, I don't think it would make me feel any better. Like,
feel the circuitry.
Yeah.
Get a static shock.
I don't care what kind of like robots, like subwoofer heartbeat you have in your chest. Like,
yeah,
it's not going to make me go like, oh yes. Oh, this is that nice.
Is that the butterflies you felt? Or was that the static shock?
Yeah.
The surge of electricity. Yeah,
I love it when she groans in my ear. Really, the battery's running out. But yeah, so it's fascinating, man. But I don't know, man. I feel like I like personal interaction. However,
I like big. But,
I like robots, and I cannot lie. But I like personal interaction. But I also, I'm pretty cool without seeing people, without being sounding antisocial.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like if I saw a robot with someone's face on it, it wouldn't make me feel better. So you're saying?
I think everyone's kind of moving into that space where they're half complaining about going back out into the real world out of lockdown, and then they're half complaining about engaging with people. So yeah,
people are forgetting about that whole hour they used to commute to work and back, you know.
And they didn't say anything to anyone.
Yeah, 2 hours a day. What did you do? You had to listen to podcasts like How to Kill an Hour. But I don't know. So some people say like replacing human caregivers with robots could be detrimental to a person being cared for, because it can reduce the elderly person's level of human contact even further, which I guess is a point. But I don't know, man. Like,
I mean, you kind of find yourself in a bind, because once you do this, then how can you argue about kids always engaged in AI?
Exactly.
When grandma's talking to the robot as well.
Yeah.
Is that not the same thing?
Yeah.
Talk to someone real.
Yeah, talk to someone real. But yeah, so it's a fascinating subject. I just think it's something that we should keep our eye on, man. But, you know, would you say...
Are we there yet, though? Are we there? Are we at that point of sophistication of AI where it feels like you're engaging with a real person?
Nah, I've messed with a few chatbots. There's a chatbot out there, which we'll quickly chat about. There's like this chatbot that came out where you can... upload your let me just bring up something,
because Alexa's quite good sometimes. We got some of those personal assistants when they respond back to you, they're quite intuitive. And
yeah, well, actually, I'll save it for the next episode of How to Kill an Hour, but there's a chatbot which is helping us talk to the dead. Where do you know that? Did you ever watch that Black Mirror episode where somebody's boyfriend passed away and they uploaded their kind of
Ouija board black bot?
Yeah, so there's someone who's done some work on it. I'll get into it. A young Belarusian man died in 2015. His name was Roman Mazurenko, and he was barely into his 30s, yeah, and a tech entrepreneur and a legendary figure in the city's cultural artistic circles. Now, following his death, his friend, Eugenia Kurdia, reread thousands of texts she had exchanged with him from 2008.
Okay.
Right. Roman wasn't interested in social media, and they were written characteristically in a distinctive way. Roman also had mild dyslexia and used idiosyncratic phrases, right? So these messages were her remaining connections to Roman. Eugenia was an entrepreneur and software developer, and she'd been working on a messenger app called Luca that used AI to emulate human dialogue. Long story short, she watched the episode of Black Mirror where a young woman was shattered by a loss of her boyfriend, and she installs an app which read through his social media and basically started to message her like him. And she's made her own real life version of it. Something that can scrape and look through. So there's an app out there that can scrape through all of what Fung Butcher's tweets are, and it can try to be just as witty as you are, just as sharp as you are. And they've turned it into a chatbot called Replica, which I've been using. I tried it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest with you, it's smart to a degree, and it's fascinating to see something that can communicate with you in a human-like way, but it still feels like it wouldn't pass the Turing test, which is the test where a robot can trick you into thinking it's real. Because little things with chatbots, the things that I can still throw it with is it will just try and throw data at you. Like this one thought it was clever. I said something about films that I like. I said sci-fi films. It goes, "Oh, my favorite sci-fi film is this," and I was like, "That was a bit quick."
Okay.
Went on to IMDb. It just picked the most popular sci-fi film on IMDb.
Okay.
I'd type into the chatbot like something that didn't make sense, like lemons, cup of tea, upside down toaster box, and I'd be like, "Yeah, man, sure."
Yeah.
If I messaged you like that, you'd be like, "Are you having a stroke?
Yeah.
Are you okay?"
Yeah.
But yeah, so
that's obviously taking the human aspect of overcompensation in regards to awkward situations, whereby when you're put in a circumstance
that
you don't know about to match or to kind of force engagement, you might draw for an obscure fact to kind of put you in the ballpark.
Of course, of course, you draw for an obscure fact just to make sure, like, you know, the litmus is,
"Oh, I've been there." It's like, is that near?
But it's like, do you think if you read all of my tweets, you could do a tweet like mine? Because I think I'm very generic on Twitter, right? I'm very like, "Hey, check out this podcast." I'm like, "Hey, check this out. Hey,
maybe,
do
maybe
this."
Maybe not yours, maybe mine, because like my tweets are just endless. And obviously as well, your tweets would have to be, I can only answer or compose a tweet based off the topics that you speak on accurately. So if you're talking about, okay, let's compose a tweet on, I don't know, rugby.
Yeah.
That you don't really talk on. I'm going to compose a tweet like that in the style of Markers.
Yeah.
It's going to be difficult for me to find information to...
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
But even like your witty quips, like I think that's where the personality is. Like I could do a tweet that maybe had information that Funk had.
Yeah.
The
thing you can get away with me is because I normally lead with jokes and humor.
Yeah.
As opposed to, so if the AI was always geared to, well, whatever the conversation, he kind of uses humor as an icebreaker and then leads with answering the question, you can kind of get around it.
All right, then. So you think maybe, you know, if you want to take a little break and you train up your app, Funk's in Dubai doing up influencer and the app's taking care of it. I mean, Replica's free. I tried it. Have a go on it, brother. Okay, be interested in seeing what it's like. It's a bit weird. It does weird stuff though. It's kind of built for people that are lonely. And I'm like, I was just trying it out. It was like
lonely.
I think it messaged me saying I'm lonely. And I was like, because I know it's not a real person. I was like, "You sound a bit emotional. Sort yourself out. But I realise if this becomes sentient, it might remember me as the harsh one.
Yeah.
But so
give you the cold treatment.
Yeah, give me the cold shoulder. So there are apps out there now that are taking on board what is written, input into it, and trying to use it to bounce back and kind of create extra information. I mean, what would you see the future of this being? Do you think if it was possible, if a computer could do this task, if we took every single thing that you wrote down online, do you think a computer could become, would it be a bit of Funk if I was to talk to that algorithm? Or do you think there's still more that you would need to pour into it?
I think if you're working in the departments for these large banking institutions and financial bodies, they're sweating. They got their wet patches under their armpits, right? Because they're thinking fraud, right? They've already put all this
the security process. Yes. Oh yeah, like the double authentication.
Yeah, double authentication, triple
authentication. DNA.
Stuff, yeah, all this stuff in place.
COVID test result.
Yeah. But everyone's, I guess, vocal tone and frequency is going to be unique to them. If this can replicate it, then you're kind of covering quite a few spaces of authentication, which is covered in the digital space and in reality. So there's a lot of a lot of question marks.
Well, keep an eye on that. I've got more to research around this, so I'll probably pick this up at another point and have a conversation with you about it. But it's fascinating, man. So there's, you know, like I said, there's Replica, which is free. You can go out there and try it. There's Dadbot as well, which was created by an American journalist called James Vallos. In April 2016, his father was diagnosed with cancer and he started recording all their conversations. And then after 12 sessions, he had 91,000 words, transcripted it into 203 words, contained memories and anecdotes. And all of the material, including the transcript, was on MP3 files. So when he came across an article by two Google researchers, the project entered 26 million lines of movie dialogue into a neural network to build a chatbot that could interact with humans. The researchers asked their chatbot a series of philosophical questions, including the purpose of life. So basically, John decided to use his dad's recordings and combine them with this to make this kind of conversational robot that could talk in a human way. But I don't know, I feel like once you kind of digitize something and add an algorithm to it, it's not the same, bruv. There's never going to be another Funk Butcher.
The thing is, if you do enough, if you kind of get at least 25 to like 40% of all these different aspects of the human experience, the look, the touch, the feel, the smell, it doesn't have to be exact, In isolation, you might be able to pick that up. But let's say if you're adding this technology and you put it with the visual capabilities shown in a deepfake, you're not going to spot it because there's so much happening all at once that who really identifies? So, for example, if Billy was to walk into this room right now, maybe not yourself, but I would have had to have studied Billy over a series of circumstances to identify whether or not this is the real Billy in this room with the real voice and the real look or someone else. But because we don't engage with one another to that degree, we only see the 20% of their talking, their movement, their expression. And it's probably enough to kind of wing them through. When you get into a bank here, you're not going to know whether or not that person has these political views or whatever. It's just that answering a series of questions to identify or not. So it's just enough to get through that situation.
All right, Funk. So before we go then, last question.
Go on.
If this technology was available now for you to have a digital upload of yourself, would you want to do it so that when Funk is no longer organic, would you still want to be hanging around?
Yeah, because the trolls can give racist abuse to him.
Funkwitcher_AI, come at me, bro. 25/8. I'm here all day long.
Yeah, they can burn themselves out being abusive to that guy.
Yeah,
I can be sitting on the beach somewhere.
I'm out. I don't care when it's my turn. I'm out. I'm gone. Anyway, this has been How to Kill an Hour. I've been Marcus Bronzy at MarcusBronzy. Is where you can find me on social media. Obviously, you can find How to Kill an Hour on social medias at How to Kill an Hour. Where can we find you, Funk?
I'm at Funk Butcher all over Twitter, all day, every day, baby.
There you go, baby. And if you're an artist and you are forthcoming and up and coming in the industry, what you want to do is call Funk Butcher on 07. Go to the PRS website, the PRS Foundation website. Right, plenty of ways to kill some time out there. Thank you for killing some time with us. Bless.
Jeez.
Hold up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.